This program was first broadcast on Arrow FM, Wairarapa's only community access media station, and shared on Access Media with the support of New Zealand On Air.
Hi folks, this is Richard Hall here from Stonehenge Aotearoa, and looking at our wonderful night sky, at least with the changes in weather, we're getting to have a good view of the skies at the moment. I also always like to thank Dan Broughton, who sponsors this program. Keith and Kay are off another task this morning, so you're going to have to put up with me for a while. But anyway, just to remind you, for those of you who don't know, Stonehenge Aotearoa is open now as we move into February from Wednesday to Saturday from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. So if you want to come out and see this awesome structure, do think about coming along. Yeah. Anyway, in our night sky at the moment, we've still got the planet Venus there. Excuse me for a moment. There we are, the planet Venus. That's that bright star that you can see in the evening sky at the moment. And as it gets darker, looking towards the north, we're going to see the most famous constellation in the sky for most people, which is the constellation of Orion. And there it is there. Of course, for those of you watching this on TV, you see that Orion's upside down. And the reason for that, of course, is all these constellations were initially named in the northern hemisphere. And so we come round here, he's upside down and so on. So there's Orion there. And that's how he should look, right? And I always say he's a mark of our summer stars, because so long as Orion is in the sky, we're going to have the lazy, hazy days of summer. When Orion begins to set in the early evening, you'll see the scorpion rising up in the east. The scorpion is the sign of winter. But at the moment, Orion's in the sky, we're going to have summer. And the two brightest stars in the constellation of Orion are Rigel, which is a definite whitish colour. But if you look at the other one, it's Betelgeuse, it's got a definite yellowy-orange tint. You see, our eyes use two different cells to view by, rods and cones. The rods are most sensitive, but they only give us black and white vision. The cones, on the other hand, give us colour vision. When we look at the night sky, we look at the stars, most of the time, the amount of light coming from a star is insufficient to trigger the cone cell. So we tend to think of stars white, right? But in fact, when you look at them through a large telescope, you discover they're all the colours of the rainbow, right? But Betelgeuse is sufficiently bright that you can begin to see a yellowy-orange hue, because it is actually a red supergiant, okay? The other bright ones are on the other shoulders, Bellatrix and Saff. And all of these stars are giants, but I often use the Orion. It can be used as a signpost to find other stars in the sky. So if we come down the belt of Orion, we come to Aldebaran, which is the eye of the bull, because that's Taurus the bull there. And surrounding Aldebaran is the Hyades star cluster. But Aldebaran is not part of this cluster of stars. It's much closer to us. It's simply a foreground star. The Hyades, on the other hand, are much further away. And then if we follow further down along that line, through or past Aldebaran, we come to Matariki, the Pleiades star cluster. And at this time of the year, they're just about their highest point in the sky that we can see. Okay, going in the opposite direction, on that line along the belt, we come to Sirius. Now, Sirius is the brightest star in the sky, right? Any star-like object in the sky that's brighter than Sirius is no star. And right now, we have got some bright objects in the night sky which are outshining Sirius. We've got two planets. Jupiter, actually, quite close to the Hyades and Aldebaran, brilliant bright star there. It looks like a star, but of course it's a giant planet. And the other important one is Mars. And Mars is in the constellation of Gemini. You can see the other two stars of Gemini, Castor and Pollux, there as well. And Mars only ever, because of its orbit, only ever comes close to us once every 2 years. And its closest point occurred just recently, when it was what we call opposition on January the 15th, Mars was its closest point to the Earth. And then after now, it's going to begin to slowly fade away. So we only have it's only very bright every 2 years. But the amazing thing about Mars, of course, is that there's been more science fiction stories written about Mars than any other place in the universe. And the reason for that is a whole host of things. I can remember when I was a kid, and I do mean as a kid, so that tells you it's a long time ago, Mum taking me to see a movie called Invaders from Mars, right? And, well, I was just pulled up a picture from that movie. Actually, I can remember it's absolutely terrifying. And when I came home, I remember we got off the bus because we didn't have cars in those days, and got off the bus and I remember looking up at the sky and we could see the stars. And I thought, Mars is probably out there somewhere. I became really interested in that. Incidentally, that movie, Invaders from Mars, is interesting, but it's actually pretty corny if you actually see it. I have seen it again quite recently. Anyway, where the legends of Mars began was with a guy called Giovanni Schiaparelli. And he was observing Mars through a large telescope. And he said that he was talking about the detail that he could see. And he could see canali. Now, that in his words, I think it's Italian, meant channels, all right? But the word became misinterpreted to canals, all right? And, of course, at that time, canals, going back in the 19th century, were the major form of transport around Europe. And we don't have big canals here in New Zealand, but I can remember where I come from, England, canals going along them and so on. Right? And there were straight lines, if you draw them on a map, between one place and another. And that's where a lot of the transport of all heavy industry went. In fact, it's a pity it just still doesn't do that. Okay, but anyway, along comes this guy called Percival Lowe, and he was interested in astronomy. He was not a professional astronomer or anything like that, and he was also a very rich man. And he built an observatory at Flagstaff and put a big telescope refractor into it, a 24-inch telescope, and specifically to observe Mars. And what Percival did, there is a picture of him there working at his telescope. He started drawing maps of Mars through this telescope. And what you see is like little round black areas interconnected by lines, which he called canals. All right. And so the assumption began that there must be an intelligent civilization on Mars, and the dark areas are possibly towns or something like that. And the lines between them are waterways running between the two. And as time went on, for those of you looking at this on TV, you can see by 1903, the amount of detail he had in channels and canals was absolutely enormous. However, the other thing was the dark areas on Mars appear to expand and contract with the seasons, because Mars shows seasons just like the Earth. And the way in which the dark areas changed tended to suggest to people that perhaps this was vegetation on Mars changing as well. So all the evidence seemed to be at that time was that there was some form of life on Mars. Okay, well, the other thing they used to see, he picked up, was flashes of light. Every now and again, from one of those dark areas, you see a flash of light come. What was this? Were they rocket ships or something like that? Who knows? But anyway, this all led, of course, to War of the Worlds, okay? And that's what inspired H.G. Wells to write War of the Worlds, was the idea that there's an alien civilization out there, possibly more technically advanced to us, and they invade the Earth. And, of course, it is perhaps the most famous of all science fiction stories, all right? Anyway, that's the story of H.G. Wells. But what happened to the Martians and the canals? Well, the reason is that most of what he was looking at were optical illusions. You see, when you look through a powerful telescope and you're looking at the limit of visibility, the eye can often join things up together. You see, the thing is, whereas he could see all these canals on Mars, other astronomers couldn't see any. But of course, the newspapers and the publicity didn't want to know about that. All they wanted to know about was Martians, so they tended to ignore it. That the fact that you couldn't see, most people couldn't see canals at all on there, right? And the other thing is that we now know, of course, Mars is a desolate world, suffers from enormous storms. And these storms, as they sweep out, can change the appearance of features on Mars. Because dust storms, sand gets deposited on the darker regions. So it turns out that the regions which were changing from one colour to another wasn't due to living things, it was simply due to storms and things like that on the surface of Mars. In addition, Mars has a whole host of atmospheric effects, and for those of you looking on this TV, you can see, oh, doesn't that look weird and wonderful, those lines being drawn? Well, they're being drawn by little tiny twisters. As it goes along, it burrows a hole in the sand, and sometimes you can end up with dead straight lines, which look like they're artificial, but they're not. They're simply created by twisters in the storms and so on. So, optical illusions. And what about the flashing lights? Well, the flashing lights were not just illusions, but in fact we now know what the flashing lights were, because people were able to identify exactly where the flashing lights come from. And it now turns out, with much greater scientific technology and so on, we're able to identify them as pieces of ice, like a sheet of ice. And so, of course, as Mars turns, every now and again, that particular piece of ice, once a day, will reflect the light of the sun, and suddenly you see a flash of light. Right? So, unfortunately, they're not aliens. It's just pieces of ice on the surface of Mars. Well, of course, in the old world, we used to think Mars was maybe a sort of miniature version of the Earth, but of course it's not. Well, it is a terrestrial planet, but it's much smaller. And because it's much smaller, it's got different atmospheres and different conditions. Its atmosphere, unlike the Earth, is mostly carbon dioxide, 95%. Oxygen is only less than 0.2%. And of course, if you've got intelligent beings, the one thing we do need on Earth is oxygen. And that's not just a fanciful thing that we use oxygen. Oxygen is the main ingredient you need for the energy for complex living creatures, all right? And there's not much water, there's trace of water vapour, all right? And so on. So its atmosphere is CO2, but it's much, much thinner. In fact, it's so thin these days that if you drop some water on the surface of Mars, very quickly it will begin to evaporate, because you see the boiling point of water depends upon the atmospheric pressure, right? So here we say the water boils at 100 degrees Celsius, right? But on Mars it'll only be about 5 degrees Celsius because of the low pressure, which isn't very good for astronauts as well, because just remember that a lot of your body is made of liquid water. So, of course, what would happen is that without a spacesuit on, your blood would boil, okay, on Mars. Now, I'm showing you a wonderful photograph taken of Mars. As you can see, it's a vast desert. But it's not just a boring desert. It's got lots of other really interesting features. Here I've just brought up some maps of Mars. And they've got the highlands and the lowlands. Now, the colours here are simply indicating the height, the altitude of different things. But the most noticeable, and also in telescopes, is the Tharsis Plateau, which is a plateau made up from big volcanoes, and a great canyon called the Mariana Valley. All right? And we look at things like the volcanoes and canyons on Earth, and we think they're pretty spectacular. Hey, they're nothing to do or compared with when we look at Mars. Here I've just pulled up a photograph of Mars itself. Of Olympus Mons, which is the largest volcano on Mars. And as you can see on the screen there, it's 27 kilometres high and 500 kilometres wide. Now, to put that in perspective, for those of you watching this on TV, you can see an image at the bottom in orange that shows you the shape of Olympus Mons. Right? And the white little triangle area, well, yeah, That's Everest to same scale, all right? So, yep. This is a truly titanic volcano. And this is just one of others. This is just a, simply the biggest one, all right? And it's got a cliff face as you go up kilometres high. So they're absolutely stupendous objects on the surface of Mars. And here's another wonderful photograph of Olympus Mons taken from overhead. The other great feature on Mars, which captures your imagination, is the Great Valley, the canyon, the Mariner Valley. And in this photograph you can see now, you can see the volcanoes to the left, but the great scar running across the centre is the Mariner Valley, okay? And it's absolutely awesome. As it points out there, it's more than 4,000 kilometres in length, 200 kilometres wide, and up to 7 kilometres deep. Now, you've got to remember the deepest oceans on Earth are about the same distance, so this is an awesome object. Going to have a little bit of a closer look at it now. And here you can see how, in this photograph here, taken by a spacecraft, how the edges of the crater have been gradually collapsing away. So all this tells us that once upon a time, or even perhaps today, there could be some volcanoes active, but certainly once upon a time, the Mars was very, very active, and the great craters we can see of the volcanoes were formed by volcanic activity in the recent past, and the gigantic canyon, almost certainly from some form of tectonic activity that's occurring. But is there any activity now? Nothing that we can detect at this particular stage. Okay. Then Mars, like the Earth, of course, which attracted science fiction writers to Mars, is it has two polar caps, but interestingly enough, they're very different. The south polar cap is 300 kilometres wide, and it's mostly made up of carbon dioxide, dry ice. So it's not something that you could drink, right? Anything like that. So it's dry ice cap, 300 kilometres wide. At the other end of Mars, we've got the north polar cap. That's 1,000 kilometres wide, and it's mostly made of water ice. So there is liquid water. Well, there is frozen water on Mars. The point is there is water. So that this is very important if we're ever thinking about having a colony on Mars. The first thing you need is water. And, of course, Mars is showing us that it has actually got all the ingredients whereby we could set up some form of colony there. Now you're looking at a photograph of the North Polar Cap seen edge on. It's 2 kilometres thick, right? So there you go. Okay, so I've drawn up a picture of Mars as being the idea is that Mars once had living things on it. It was a world similar to the Earth, and eventually all those ideas and that were dashed by better observations and so on, and showing that it wasn't like that. So is Mars just a boring, dead world? Well, the thing is that when we look at the history of Mars, from the information we've got, the evidence is that Mars was a very different world than it is today, and indeed that Mars was probably very, very similar to the Earth once upon a time. I want to show you some other imagery that we've got from spacecraft there. Now, going back to that image I showed you earlier of the topography, high in altitude, see the blue regions, which now are deserts. Right? Better put that back on again, which are deserts. Once upon a time, we believe, were covered with water. Right? So Mars, once upon a time, did have oceans on there. Right? And look at this photograph here. You can see all these river channels. So once upon a time, there was flowing water on Mars. And here's another one there. These are exactly what you if you take photographs of the Earth from some distance away and took away the vegetation, you see all the scars of river systems. And these cover Mars. So once upon a time, it rained on Mars. There was water and rivers flowing into lakes and oceans and so on. And here is, we've got a photograph of a crater, dust. But what we now know is that actually beneath there is ice and possibly even water. So once upon a time, Mars was warmer. There was liquid water there and so on. Look at this one here along this Mangala Valley. If you look at it, you can see what was appears to be the boundary or of an ancient shoreline. But look at the craters that have occurred where there's been impacts later. You see the where this water's actually melted or ice has melted and flooded out, and then it's frozen again. So beneath the dust and sand in these regions, we believe there's ice, and there could still be liquid water there. So that's, look at these two pictures here, the Mars that was, ancient Mars, and as it is today. And of course the question is, did life evolve on Mars? And this is of course the important thing we want to know. And in fact we've actually got quite a level of evidence to some degree that it actually did. Right? Now, as I've just brought up here, widespread outcrops of the mineral olivine suggests that the surface has not been in contact with water for a billion years. So Mars itself was, yes, it was like the Earth once upon a time, but that changed over a billion years ago and it's become a vast desert. But if life evolved on Mars, could it still exist somewhere down there? Well, what I've just brought up now is a photograph of a meteorite, which we now know is Martian. The rock comes from Mars. It was ejected about 3.5 billion years ago, right? The age of it is about 3.5 billion years. So it goes into that region where Mars was a living world, if it was. And it was ejected from Mars about 15 million years ago, and then eventually arrived on Earth as a meteorite, a really weird and wonderful meteorite. But when scientists began looking at this meteorite from Mars in detail, they began to discover some weird and wonderful things. The detail, some of you can see that on the things before, little tiny structures which don't look like anything other than living creatures. Now take a close-up look at this. What's that little object there? It looks like a segmented worm. So what we've got here with photographs, and of course we can't match them up with anything living now because it's a long way in the past, but on this rock alone, which probably came from one of the water regions, we've got this evidence that there was abundant life on Mars. And of course the question then arises, how far did that life evolve? Did we get from water living creatures, did we get land living creatures? And then of course did intelligent beings and creatures begin to evolve on there? The question is, we don't know at this stage. And that's why scientists are so interested in going back to Mars and landing on Mars and finding out about it. So once upon a while, if you look at this image you can see on here, the one on the left-hand side is showing you Mars in its early stages, where it had oceans and so on. And then as the temperatures declined, it began to freeze down. And then eventually the oceans then got buried underneath dust. So those flat areas we now believe are actually buried oceans. And while there's ice there, it may well be that there's enough temperature warmth coming from the centre of Mars to allow a liquid water to still exist. And there the pressure down there would be sufficient for water to exist. So maybe life still exists on Mars to this very day. So this is another picture of Mars, of what an extraordinary world it is, and so many things to learn about right on our doorstep. If you'd like to learn more about these things, we do run what we call Star Treks out at Stonehenge. You do have to book them, though. You have to phone up Stonehenge and book one. And right now Mars is in our sky. We can pick that out for you and so on. So that's Mars. And also, just to finally remind you that we're open from Wednesday to Saturday, 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. Right, so that's the stuff that we've got hanging on at the moment. And having said that, I'll be back to speak to you in about a fortnight's time. But do go out and look at those planets there. Remember, the big bright star to the left is Jupiter. After that's after Venus has set, and then you've also got Mars, and it'll be noticeably red in colour. Right? And Mars rises up in the early evening now, and the best place to look at it was towards the northeast. Okay, folks, that's bye from Richard, and I'll catch you up in the near future.